You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 22nd of December. The Jazz stun the Spurs despite being shorthanded. Rodney goes bananas. We'll break that down. Look at the Jazz home road differential as well, and it's a pack Friday. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow. How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. Thanks so much for tuning in to today's show. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, information, hopefully some expertise, and of course, geeky numbers you cannot get anywhere else. Happy holidays. This will be the last time we chat before you celebrate Christmas. So have a wonderful time with the family. I do not know exactly what my plans are here. So we won't do a show Monday. Tuesday, we're in Denver. There's a possibility I could do a show. Wednesday, we're on a back-to-back in Golden State. There's probably not a possibility I'm doing a show. So we'll probably, and then I'll probably be back with you Thursday, Friday, next week, and then not sure what we'll do about the first of the year. So just so you know, there'll be a little sparse in there. If you have not listened to the Kevin Pelton Locked On NBA this week, I'd strongly suggest it. I thought it was really insightful, and actually we've had some coaches and people around the league have even emailed me about it or texted me, and so there's some good conversation to be had there. Today's show is brought to you by my friends over at Murdoch Hyundai, as well as Stevens Henniger College. So thanks very much to them. Let's dig in right off the win. Big picture. Enormous win. We can discuss, like, does it prove how good the Jazz are or anything like that? I don't think it proves that, considering how many players were out for San Antonio. So I'm not one who says, oh, this proves the Jazz are great or anything. What I do think is I think it's a mammoth win for a few reasons. One, that last stretch was hard, both physically and mentally, and getting hammered, and guys were getting worn out. Coaches were getting worn out. Players were getting worn out. It sucks to lose. These guys are world-class competitors. They're battling, and you know they get blasted. They're up 9 in Houston, and they get blasted, and they lose by 21, and you're feeling like you actually played pretty well, and then you go to Oklahoma City, and you put out a dud, and you get run, and you know in Cleveland, it felt like LeBron was just toying with you, and you know. And in retrospect, Chicago's playing a lot better than you realized at the time. I think they finally lost the other day when they put Markkanen back in the lineup. It just got hard, right? You just had lost, frankly, I think they'd lost 7 of 8. So you needed a game to kind of rekindle the spirit. And that's what last night does. Now, the schedule's still brutal here for a while, but it rekindled the spirit. It gives them a little, all right, we're okay. That's a good one. Makes you feel good about yourself. And we needed that as a group, or they needed that. I mean, I felt fine about myself calling games, but you can feel it when you're on the road with the team that this group needed something positive. Then the other big picture item is, I mean, this schedule is ridiculous, right? So it was Pelicans, Wizards, Thunder, Rockets, Bucks, Bulls, Celtics, Cavs, Rockets, Thunder, Spurs, Thunder, Nuggets, Warriors, Cavaliers for the month. And the whole time I've said if the Jazz can find a way to get 5 wins and go 5-10 in the month, they're still in this. They got 4. I don't know if we're getting the Thunder, win in Denver. I doubt we're beating Golden State. I don't know if we can beat Cleveland at home. We've gotten LeBron the last few times. So I don't know if we can get another one this month, but it's a nice it puts you in a position before if you can get another one that you're still in this. And as we've talked about, and we do kind of that Wednesday rundown on NBA 5, the other guys aren't rolling right now, right? We focus on ourselves an awful lot and what we're doing, but there's not a lot of focus here on what is taking place with everybody else. And so if you go look at the last you know, 10 games around the rest of the league, the Western Conference, Portland and New Orleans and Denver and the teams we're competing with, they aren't rolling. Portland's 26th in the league overall in the last 10 games, 23rd offensively, 20th defensively. New Orleans is 30th in the league defensively. They're 5th offensively. The Nuggets are 29th in the league defensively in that stretch. The Thunder are actually probably playing as well as anyone. And then there's us. And to Minnesota's credit, they're separating themselves a little bit. So give Minnesota the credit. So everyone else is kind of going through this too. And we don't look at that. So that's the big picture to me, is the fact that that win just kind of rekindles the spirit, is what I would say, as much as anything. To me, that's, I don't know if you buy, you know, you got to decide you buy into that. And as an analytical guy, I don't usually, but I do think that that's where the team was. And I think I can give you that insight from being around the team as much as I am. Some interesting things happened last night. Quinn went back to Jarebko as the starter. I like what Quinn did here. So let's talk Joe Johnson for a second. I don't know where Joe Johnson is and what he is capable of. This guy is the ultimate pro, right? There are some really, really special guys in our league right now. Jason Terry, Dirk Nowitzki, Vince Carter. Some of them are Hall of Famers. Some of them are not. Dirk's played 49,000 minutes regular season. Vince has played 43. Joe Johnson's played 43. LeBron's played 42. Jason Terry's played 41. Powell's played 39. Crawford's played 39. Tony Parker's played 36,000. Carmelo's played 36,000. I mean, this group of guys. So Joe Johnson's played 43,000 minutes. Vince Carter's played the exact same. And if you look at where kind of Vince Carter is right now, Joe Johnson has been a step ahead of him. But there's a chance that Joe Johnson is winding down here. And at some point it happens, right? I mean, there's nothing critical about that. It's just, it happens. So I like what Quinn did, which is, if we're going to try to get you going again, you're important to the team, let's put you into the starting lineup. The other concept there that I think is important is Joe Johnson has a aura to him, a value to who he is as a player. You know, when they walk out on the floor, LeBron points at him like, you're Joe Johnson. You know, Joe Johnson's wearing his Timberland Nikes last night because he's got the Air Jordan contract. And this team doesn't have any of that chutzpah to it. So putting Joe in the starting lineup was to try to give Joe that ability to be that guy. Now, the reality might be that only 20 guys in the NBA have ever played more minutes in their career than Joe Johnson, so it might be really winding down. And if you look at most guys at 43,000 minutes, they don't have that juice. The combination with Favors hasn't worked. It didn't work last year, and it hasn't worked this year. And so to start that group together, suddenly put, last year, when Joe Johnson and Derek Favors were on the floor together for 111 minutes, their defensive rating was 125. Quinn had avoided it all season long. They hadn't played together all year until just the other day. And they've only played 17 minutes together, but their defensive rating was 135. And they played some together last night because it's unavoidable right now. But you don't need to start that way. So Quinn went back to Jarebko. Jarebko and Favors on the floor together so far, their defense is not great, but the offense has been great. In 230 minutes, when they're on the floor together, Favors and Jarebko have a 118 offensive rating. It's the Jazz best offensive big with a small combo that they have. And the defense is only 107.6. It's not great, but it's a plus 11. Couple that with the fact that the Jazz first quarters are 28th or 29th in the league offensively. Last night he starts Jarebko and they get a nice bounce early. I thought that was just a subtle little coaching move last night, or maybe not subtle that you change the starting lineup, but there was kind of logic on both sides. It's where decisions can be made that are both right. Getting Joe Johnson the platform seemed to work, and then it just didn't. But then when Joe came in, coupled with Favors, that's when the Jazz went on an 11-2 run late in the first quarter to take the edge in the game, and it worked better at that point. Now, that's also nice. They had Joffrey Laverne in right then instead of Pau Gasol, and there were some matchup things that were obviously good with how limited the Spurs were. Then Joe Johnson plays his second set of minutes with Epe Udo, and that lineup has actually been pretty good this year. They've played 107 minutes together, and Johnson and Udo are 107 offensively and 102 defensively. So then Quinn's able to get Joe Johnson out there with Udo for Udo's entire stretch in that first quarter, in which he was plus four. And then again, in that second stretch, the Jazz go on a nice little run, and Joe Johnson is matching Udo for most of his time. So just a nice little subtle change there that I thought was big into leading to that that performance and that win last night by the Jazz. The other one that they did that's a kind of a coaching standpoint, and then we'll talk about some individual performances, is out of a bunch of timeouts last night and key plays, you saw the Joe Ingles, Derek Favors pick and roll. That is, other than recently when Hood and Udo have been great together, and they've been great recently over the last little while. Rodney's been really special on the pick and roll in the last 16 games. Really special. I'll touch on that for you in the next segment. But of all of our pick and roll combinations, every single one of our players is actually better with Udo, Rodney, recently, not for the whole season, but all the others are better with Udo than anyone else, except for the one group that's really good also is Ingles and Favors. And you saw out of timeouts last night that Quinn went to the Ingles-Favors combo. A lot of action before him, but ended with Ingles-Favors combination. Derek was very engaged last night and was just, and they were terrific. So I thought that was a vital part of the game last night. We usually do our quick little numbers run through, but I wanted to get to those two things first. So let me, and then we'll get to the individual performances. Let me fly through our usual segment for you, only because I thought those were more important than just pure numbers. Sometimes the criticism has been laid of this show. You give me numbers, you don't give me enough analysis. I actually think it's accurate, so I wanted to make sure I didn't do it. How's that? Every now and then, listen. Pace of play last night was slow at 93 possessions. Offensive rating was 108, which is really, really good. The Spurs didn't have all their defensive guys last night, but that's a pretty good number. The defensive rating last night was incredible, 95.9. So really a great, great performance by the Jazz. Again, anything under 100 is elite. Anything over 110 offensively is elite. Jazz effective field goal percentage was 54% last night. They did have a little bit excessive mid-range offense last night. They scored 18 points in the mid-range, but you won, so who cares? And rebounding standpoint, both teams dominated on the defensive glass, and there was almost no offensive rebounding in the game. Let's go to the hustle board and the player tracking numbers from last night on the make or miss aspect of this league. And it's funny how it just is so much of this league every night. We can look at it and do all the other aspects, but boy, in Oklahoma City and Houston, we just didn't make shots. And last night we went 21 of 49, about league average, 43% on uncontested shots, whereas the Spurs went 19 of 44. So they were actually about the exact same. We hit some contested shots last night. Make or miss last night was about even on both sides. Patty Mills was 4 of 10 for them. Rodney Hood was 7 of 16, missing some late. Let's go to the hustle board and give the credit to those guys who were busting their butt last night. Screen assists for the Utah Jazz last night, 6 for Derek Favors, 4 for Epe Udo. Deflections, 3 for Ingles, 2 for Rubio, 3 for Udo. And then contested shots, 17 by Derek Favors last night. The energy and activity level by Derek, just tremendous. Today's show brought to you in part by Murdoch Hyundai. If you're looking in the market for a car, I just cannot tell you how much my eyes have been opened by being a part of the Hyundai or the Murdoch family and being involved with them on what the Hyundai product is. I simply didn't know. I mean, I knew that Hyundai believed in their own product to have the 100,000-mile Hyundai Assurance, which is obviously the greatest warranty you can have out there. But it wasn't until I drove the Santa Fe, then the Tucson, then the Ioniq that I really began to understand what level we're talking about and what quality with the Hyundai. That's not honestly something that I would have associated with their brand before and do now. So if you're in the market, if you're going to get a sedan, make sure you go check out the Sonata along the way and see what you, or the Elantra, depending your price range, and see what you're looking for. If you're looking for an SUV, they've got the Santa Fe or the Tucson. And if you're looking for a hybrid, I drove the Ioniq. Don't just automatically go grab your Prius. Go walk over to Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street and check out what they have to offer. You'll get the no regrets buying experience, which is the signature to who the Murdochs are. Price match guarantee, 5-day return policy, car washes for life, extended hours of service to try to do everything that they can to make sure that they make your life as easy as possible. 4646 South State Street in Murray. It's Murdoch Hyundai. All right. Last night, individual performances. Rod was great, and Rod has been great here for a while. So on the pick and roll stuff, over the last 16 games going into last night, I don't have last night's numbers added, Rodney's like at 1.16 points per pick and roll. This is a pretty neat development. Rodney is the, and this is where the Jazz really, really miss Rod. Now, Rod's not a passer off the pick and roll. But, and that's fine. He's going to go use the pick and roll to get himself his look. He can get the look so well with his length and who he is as a player that he uses that pick for his own advantage, not to create for somebody else. The Jazz desperately need that. When they were missing Rodney, the Jazz don't have a single player on the pick and roll that's above league average, according to Synergy. Rodney's in the 82nd percentile, shoots 46% on the pick and roll. There's not another guy on the Jazz roster that's over the 50 percentile on the pick and roll as a ball handler. So when one of the reasons why we're having such a hard time getting the role to Rudy and the role to Derek is that when Rubio or Alec or Ingles or Neto or Donovan, who's getting better, but still and getting a lot better, but still for the season came off the pick and roll, there wasn't a fear. Rodney brings a fear. You better bring the big up. You better do some things, and then you can start to get Derek on the roll. Rodney just brings an element that nobody else on the roster brings, and he has been terrific. His shooting recently is as good as we've ever seen from him. He has absolutely been dominating in so many ways with his offensive play as of late. He has came last night. He's 3 of 10 from three, which is great because it's such to get 10 threes off. Before that, since he came back from his injury in the last six games, he was shooting at about 55%. But if you just look at his last six games since coming back, he's at 47% from the field, 49% from threes, averaging 19 points a game. So only got two rebounds, only two assists. He is what he is. And that's a bona fide NBA scorer. And that is, we desperately need it. He's now linked, since the ninth game of the year, he's been in double figures for 18 straight games. Now, there's a seven-game absence in there. And obviously, the next question on Rod is how many games in a row can he go before his body fails? I mean, his longest stretch this year is he went 16 games and then sat out. And last year, I think his longest stretch was 11 games. So that's going to be the biggest question. But, boy, it's 26 the other night, 29. You start to, you know, we talk about the bell curve with him. That's been the biggest conversation point I've had with Rodney over the last period of time is, you know, his bell curve was too wide. He's cut off the backside of his belt. What I mean by that is too many nights he used to give you 7 and then he'd give you 18. He's cut off the backside of his bell curve this year. In the last half of the season, so if you break the season into kind of two parts for him, his first 13 games, in his second 13 games, his low point total, he had a 13 at Philadelphia, he had an 11 at Cleveland, but at the same time, he's dropped 30, 31, 26, and 29. He's averaging 20 points a game in his last 13 at 47% from the field, 46% from three. In his first set of games this year, he was averaging 16 points a game at 38%. So there's been a huge, huge jump in the second half here of Rodney's season in that injuries in the middle, and so we'll see how well he can stay healthy. Great to see. Faves was so engaged last night. Those two dunks early in the game, and you know this is the great question, and I said it like immediately into the game. Boy, if that's the Derek Favors we have tonight, you got a chance. So the question is why not every night? Some of it has to do with matchups and how he plays when Rudy's on the floor, and some of it has to do with he got hit. You know, remember, Rudy gets hurt in that Boston game, and Derek gets hit right afterwards. So we haven't had a chance to try to recreate that kind of magic they had going for that 11-game stretch without Rudy the first time. He had 14 points, 9 rebounds last night. His defense on Aldridge was the key. Aldridge was 1 of 6 in the first quarter of the game, and I thought didn't particularly seem as though he was highly engaged in the first half. They tried to get him engaged in the early parts of the third quarter, trying to go to him time and time again and sort of got him rolling, but he didn't stay that way. Derek made it hard on him. And, you know, a little bit of what kind of Steven Adams did to Derek the night before is that you're tired, you're on a back end of a back-to-back, and the other guy makes it hard on you, and it's hard to fight through that. It's human nature, and it's just the reality of being an elite of playing against the best in the world, and Derek did an incredible job last night of that. Udo continues to do great things. Our defensive rating with Udo as the center this year is a 101.3. With Favors or Gobert off the floor is a 101.3. That's high-level stuff. Coming into last night, Gobert was at 100 without either the other two guys. Udo was at 101 and Favors was at 109. Last night, the Jazz put together just a great defensive outing. And the defense over the last 5 games prior to that was 27th in the league. So that was... that was good to see. Rubio played with fabulous passion last night. That's what he brings. If you can engage Ricky Rubio at that level, he's not going to bring in more than a 40% shooter and a 30% shooter from three. We keep trying to put other things on him than that. But what you got out of him last night was the passion that he plays the game with. It was a better matchup, certainly, than Russell Westbrook. But he was terrific last night. And those are the... you know, that's what I think you're looking for. Quinn seeing more and more out of him, and why Quinn is more and more pleased out of Ricky figuring out how he fits into this team and how he plays for them. Hood, Udo, Favors, lineup change, Rubio. I think I got it. Those were all the little notes. All right, we'll do Pack Friday. First, let me tell you about Stevens Henniger College. Holidays always seem to be that time of year where you might address where you are in your life, what's going on. You're heading to work today. You're listening to this and you don't. I got you. Stevens Henniger is built to help you out. It's helped students to get a better job sooner. They work extremely hard to help you stay in school. They have the services set up for it. Even help you out by letting you use a laptop that upon graduation they give you for free. The support mechanism is there. So the first thing they've built is an environment where they're trying to help you get that career change. Maybe it's that missing degree. Maybe when you're in college, you weren't as engaged as you are now. You know better now. You think this is your vehicle to a better life. So they're built there. That's the structure, what they're hoping for. Then they've got the structure to support you and help you through it. They got a financial aid planner who will sit down with you from the beginning and make sure you understand exactly what the costs are. No surprises. You can figure out if it works for you. 4 weeks classes at a time, small classes, about 9.5 to 1, flexible, narrow focus, pretty high paced, so that you can get through it and move forward with your life. Maybe Stevens Henniger is the answer for you. About 10 hours of classes a week, if you can fit that in. Maybe it's computer sciences, businesses, computer networking, computer programming, HR, whatever it is. Take a second and look at Stevens Henniger. Why don't you text the keyword to 88588. I'll say that again. Text keyword to 88588 or visit uneducation.com. That's uneducation.com for Stevens Henniger. Maybe that's the move for 2018 that pushes you to new places. All right, let's do Pack Friday. I'm trying to theme this one out a little bit. We're going to do our top 10, bottom 10, for the last 10 games in the season of the Jazz, and then we're going to do answer your questions, and then if we have time, I was going to look at Toronto and Indiana and see if we could see why maybe they're better than anyone expected. All right, your top 10 Pack players of the year up to this point. LeBron James is on a different level than the rest of the league. He's at 4.4. James Harden is at 3.6. So everyone is saying that Harden is leading. Excuse me. Wow. Wait 1 second. Everybody is saying that Harden is your lead MVP because he's having a better offensive year than LeBron. It's not true. It's not even close, actually. So LeBron is averaging 4.4 pack, which means in his 22 scoring opportunities a night, he's scoring 4.4 points more than the average player in the NBA would with the same possessions. If you dispersed his possessions to his 22 possessions to an average player across your team, you would score, LeBron scores 4.4 points more. This is why one of the major premises is an inefficient, this is the problem with Oklahoma City. If you have an inefficient, high usage player on your roster and you already have a high usage player, then that player really has no value. There might be some value to a not particularly efficient, high usage player who's using possessions somebody else wouldn't use. Right? So if you don't actually have anybody else on your roster that could use him and they're using him better than the rest of the roster, then there might be some value. But if you have a high usage player and then you have another one and he's inefficient, he really has no value. He's a big negative. So right now in the league, number one is LeBron. Number two is Harden. Number three is Curry. Number four is Anthony Davis. Nikolai Mirotic's only playing 8 games, but he would be 5. Giannis is 5. Kevin Durant is 6. Clint Capella is 7. Karl Anthony Towns is 8. Kevin Love is 9. Klay Thompson, 10. Those are the top 10. Kyrie Irving, 11, with Jason Tatum, 12. Steven Adams at 13. Those are the only guys over 2-pack. Chris Paul, 14. Kyle Korver, 15. Dwayne Dedmon, 16. Enes Kanter, 17. Victor Oladipo, what a year, 18. Bielitsa, 19. DeAndre Jordan, 20. Aaron Gordon slipping down to 21. He was a bit higher. Mike Scott, Rudy Gobert are the next ones on that list. All right, let's go to the worst offensive players on the season. Lonzo Ball still holds his spot at the bottom, followed by Russell Westbrook, minus 3-pack. Really just poor. Rookie Dennis Smith, rookie Josh Jackson. Danilo Gallinari in his 11 games has not been right. We may have dodged a bullet there. Minus 2-2 for De'Aaron Fox. What's interesting is Dennis Lindsay's always, I've talked to him about a lot. Dennis has always kind of been concerned about Danilo's body, but we had no choice after Gordon. And there's a thought that if Gordon hadn't waited so long, that maybe we'd have had a chance to get Gallinari. Maybe we didn't want to. De'Aaron Fox, minus 2.2. Deion Waiters, minus 2.1. Andrew Wiggins, minus 2.1. Boy, is he just terrible. I don't know on Andrew Wiggins. I'm so mystified by him, but I'm hedging toward he just might not be good. Marcus Smart, minus 2.2. Carmelo, minus 1.9. And Paul Zipser, Mike James, Yusuf Nurkic, and John Wall wrap up the bottom 10. Let's go to who are the hottest players in the NBA. LeBron James still holds at 4.0. Etwan Moore in New Orleans is number 2. Clint Capella, 3. Zach Randolph. Wow. Zach Randolph over the last 9 games is shooting 61% from the floor, 36% from 3, and is the 4th best offensive pack player in the league. Chris Paul, 5. James Harden, 6. Chris Middleton, 7. Kyrie, 8. Victor Oladipo, 9. Josh Richardson in Miami is hot. George Hill's hot in the 8 games he's played, so Sacramento putting it together a little bit. And any other names that jump out a little bit surprising in here to look for? Trey Lyles, plus 2.7 in his last 10. Good for Trey. Troy Daniels is hot in Phoenix at positive 2.6. Jamal Murray is hot in Denver at positive 2.5. Coldest players in the NBA? Andrew Wiggins, minus 4.7. Wow. Over the last 10 games. Carmelo Anthony, minus 4.2. Russell, minus 4.0. Wesley Johnson in L.A., minus 3.8. Ish Smith, minus 3 in Detroit. That's a killer. Dennis Schroeder, minus 2.9. Kemba Walker. Wow, didn't know Kemba was struggling. Minus 2.8, Josh Jackson. Then Paul George. Wow, the 3 Thunder guys. Avery Bradley in Detroit is struggling, minus 2.8. Pascal Siakam is a minus 2.6. I think they might have taken him out of the lineup and put OG Anunoby in, and it's changed everything there. And Juwan Evans, the rookie, is also on the list. All right, let's go to quickly a check of the Jazz, and then last 10 and overall, and then I'll answer a question or two, and I don't know if we're going to have time to do what I'd hoped. Rudy's still your best pack player at 1.6, Joe Ingles, 0.9, Tabo, Derek Favors at 0.7, Jonas and Rodney Hood at 0.4. That is a huge jump for him. So excited for Rod. A.B., Udo, O'Neal, all close to average. Donovan's minus 0.8, Ricky Rubio's minus 0.8, and Joe Johnson's minus 1.8. Now, here's what gets interesting for Utah. Is if you suddenly take, now here's the last 10 games. Rodney Hood has played six of them, so 1.5. Donovan's a 0.9. Tabo's 0.7. Royce O'Neal, 0.4. Joe Ingles, 0.4. Alec Burks, 0.2. Udo, 0.1. Gobert is even. So Rudy really, people are wondering, one of the questions I got was, why if Rudy's such a good pack player, is the offense not as good with Rudy? And the answer is because Rudy's not as good right now. Rudy used to be a two-point pack, positive two-pack player. If he was back to that, then that the offense would be rolling. Jonas, for the last 10 games, has slipped to slightly negative at 0.3, and so has Faves, which he, when he was playing center, he was at like a plus 2. Joe Johnson and Ricky Rubio suddenly become your only negative players. Now, Joe, let's see what happens with him and let him see if he can get his rhythm back. But if you can suddenly get rolling and have Ricky as your only negative player, the offense is actually going to be pretty good. We're the third best shooting team in the league. And so that's a positive thought, particularly if we can figure out how to play defensively with all of our lineups. Wondering why Toronto's so good right now, and looking at them on both the season and the last 10 games, one thing Toronto has is that they're above average when everyone's on the floor. How about, do they have negative pack players? And they actually have two guys that are playing that are negative pack players. I didn't, and almost three. I didn't think we were going to see this. Norman Powell's a minus 0.3. Fred VanVleet is a minus 0.7. And Pascal Siakam is a minus 0.8 for the season. Over the last 10 games, CJ Miles joins that group. So does DeLon Wright. But they are getting great performances from Ibaka. DeMar DeRozan last night was ridiculous. Jakob Poeltl, OJ Anunoby are all pack 1.5 or more. For the season, what they have is they just have a... And there's a great value to this in pack. If you can't have Steph and you can't have James Harden, you can't have... DeMar DeRozan's 1.3, Kyle Lowry's 1.3, Jakob Poeltl's 1.2, Serge Ibaka's 1.1, Valanciunas 0.9, OJ Anunoby 0.9, DeLon Wright 0.7. You just CJ Miles is 0.1. You just have all your guys be just a little bit better than average. I'm surprised they're as good as they are offensively with VanVleet, Powell, and Siakam being negative. I was a little surprised to see that. The other one that's been better than I think people anticipated offensively was Indiana. So I want to take a check at them. And I was actually a little surprised here as well because they actually do have a whole collection of bench guys that are negative also. Corey Joseph, minus 0.4. Thad Young, minus 0.4. Lance Stevenson, minus 0.7. And yet, Victor Oladipo, so they really are being carried by Victor Oladipo's incredible season so far this year, which also means that if for any reason Oladipo struggles, they're gonna fade pretty significantly. I don't think there was anyone else, kind of when I looked through on offensive teams that have been a surprise. I'm surprised that Toronto is 4, Minnesota is 5, and Indiana is 6 with the amount of negative pack players that they've had this year. That I will admit, that was not what I anticipated, that I thought I was going to find when looking for those things today. Peter Edmondson, who's the host of Locked On Grizzlies, sent in a question, which I think is interesting, is Mark Gasol pack this year compared to years prior. Gasol actually used to be a guy that my memory is on his best of years kind of hung toward the top. This year, Memphis, now Mike Conley being out, and there's an interesting note on Conley and Gasol. No two players pass to each other more than those two. So if we go back to the 14-15 season with Gasol, he was a 0.8 pack player. It's good, really good. He didn't shoot threes then. In 15-16, Mark was a negative 0.4 pack player. So he'd become so mid-range dependent, he was negative. 16-17 is last year where he adds the pack. He adds the three, and he stays even. So this would lead you, I thought this was surprising, Peter, that this would lead you to kind of believe that Mark actually has never been a great offensive player the way probably envisioned. And this year he is, in fact, much worse at minus one pack. I then walked it back even to the 13-14 season trying to figure this out. I was really kind of surprised because my memory was exactly what I said. I thought he was one of the better pack players. And he was a minus 0.4 pack player in 13-14. So 13-14 minus 0.4. 0.8 in 14-15 was his best there was. That was the year which I'm thinking about probably where I thought of him as top. He then adds the 15-16. He goes to negative 0.4. He adds the 3 because of that. Doesn't help him and change him. He goes to even, and then this year he's a minus 1. So over the years, Marc Gasol would not be classified as that big guy. It's kind of like LaMarcus Aldridge, who's really just not that efficient of an offensive player. That wraps up today's edition of Pack Friday, as well as Locked on Jazz. Thanks very much for tuning in. We'll talk to you Tuesday or Wednesday of next week. Have a Merry Christmas. Happy Holidays.